You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja.
We love the herb.
It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is March 7th, 2018, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the program. We got a jam-packed 2 hours of live podcasting coming to you today from MJAgenda.com. And I'd like to encourage you to check out the newly revised MJAgenda.com site. I've made it a little bit easier for you to find all of the podcast links for this first free hour podcast. The first hour is free. You can get it on Facebook, Google Play, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, who am I forgetting, Spotify, and more. Just check out MJAgenda.com. Also at MJAgenda.com, you can sign up for to become a patron of the Marijuana Agenda. $4.20 a month gets you a secret podcast feed of just the second hour, available only for you patrons of the Marijuana Agenda. And if you sign up for $9.99 a month, you'll also get free downloads of some of my most important stats, data, charts, tables, all the miscellaneous stuff that I bring to you here on the Marijuana Agenda. Yours for $9.99 a month. Just visit MJAgenda.com. Now, on today's program, we've got two guests joining us in our free first hour. First, we'll be hearing from Dr. Jehan Marku. He's the Chief Science Officer for Americans for Safe Access. In our patient-focused update segment, he's going to tell us all about the 2018 Guide to State Medical Marijuana Programs. They've given a report card to every state and a lot of details about those programs. We talked to him about that, plus the upcoming events that are coming up, conferences that are happening in the medical cannabis sphere. Also, we are speaking to Morgan Fox, the Communications Director for the Marijuana Policy Project. He's joining us in the Marijuana Policy Insider to talk a little bit about federal reforms and how so many of them are coming through and getting more and more support on a bipartisan basis, but they face one huge obstacle, a roadblock named Representative Pete Sessions, the Republican from Amarillo, Texas. We'll also talk about how federal law allows President Trump to get his wish to execute some drug dealers. And then stay tuned for hour two, Toker Talk Radio. We got all sorts of stories to bring to you, including one about the Supreme Court. But first, the news.
This is your cannabis headline news, brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for the week of Wednesday, March 7th, 2018. I'm Russ Belville. A United Nations drug enforcement body is warning international leaders to keep marijuana illegal. Quote, governments and jurisdictions in North America have continued to pursue policies with respect to the legalization of the use of cannabis for non-medical purposes in violation of the 1961 convention as amended, end quote, the International Narcotics Control Board wrote in its annual report published last week. Specifically, the board said that a proposed marijuana legalization law that is moving through Canada's parliament is in, quote, contravention, end quote, of the international agreements. The UN body also criticized state cannabis legalization policies in the U.S., saying, quote, the decriminalization of cannabis has apparently led organized criminal groups to focus on manufacturing and trafficking other illegal drugs, such as heroin. The Trump administration's top health official claimed that there, quote, really is no such thing as medical marijuana, end quote. U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar said on Friday that, quote, we have treatments that are approved by the Food and Drug Administration that are safe, that are proven to be safe and effective for pain, safe and effective for other conditions, end quote. Azar, a former executive with pharmaceutical company Eli Lilly, was speaking in an appearance at an Ohio medical center that treats newborn babies whose mothers used opioids or other drugs while pregnant. Quote, there is no FDA-approved use of marijuana, a botanical plant, he said, responding to a question from a reporter with Yellow Springs News. Closing, quote, I just want to be very clear about that, end quote. Illinois voters are ready to legalize marijuana for recreational purposes, but Illinois' Governor Bruce Rauner is not. According to a new poll from Southern Illinois University's Carbondale's Paul Simon Public Policy Institute, 66% of Illinois voters favor legalizing recreational marijuana if taxed and regulated like alcohol, while 32% are opposed. There were 3% of voters who were unsure. But in an interview with the Ford County Record, Governor Rauner insists he'll veto a bill being considered by the legislature, saying, quote, "Let's not legalize it in Illinois now. Let's watch what's happening in these other states and learn," end quote. Michigan voters are also ready to legalize marijuana, and a former U.S. attorney agrees. A new Epic MRA poll commissioned by Michigan Normal asked voters about a proposed initiative to legalize marijuana. 61% of voters said they would vote for the measure, with 45% indicating they were a definite yes. Just 35% opposed the initiative, with just 28% in the definite no category. Former U.S. attorney Pat Miles, who enforced federal marijuana prohibition, said in a statement on Wednesday that, quote, "the classification of marijuana as a Schedule 1 drug is ridiculous," end quote. Miles, who is running for Michigan Attorney General, has punted on questions about legalization until now by saying it is up to the voters. In an interview last year, he said it may be more prudent to wait until the federal government acts on marijuana before further changing the state's cannabis laws. An analysis of New York City complaints and arrests for marijuana seem to show the NYPD's explanation for racial disparities could be incorrect. Politico reports that 86% of the people arrested for marijuana possession in the fifth degree during 2017 were people of color. 48% were black and 38% were Hispanic. Only 9% were white. Pressed by recent city council members to explain the disparity, political brass said, quote, "the overwhelming majority of arrests or summons for marijuana come from community complaints," end quote. But Politico's analysis found that in some black and Hispanic districts, there were half as many complaints as arrests. But in white, wealthier districts, there were sometimes half as many arrests as complaints. A coalition of healthcare professionals, law enforcement groups, faith leaders, and others is forming to oppose State Question 788, which would establish one of the nation's most progressive medical marijuana statutes in Oklahoma. Among its provisions, Oklahoma will allow patients to cultivate 6 mature plants with no restrictive dispensary halos or hardship conditions. Patients can possess 3 ounces of marijuana in public and 8 ounces at home, as well as 1 ounce of concentrates and 4.5 pounds of edibles. Marijuana from dispensaries would only be taxed at 7%, and local authorities could not ban them. The rights of patients and employment, housing, and education would be protected. And most incredibly, Oklahoma would have no qualifying condition list. Only California has that sort of standard.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Okay, maybe you're a little high. Today in the United States, 1 in 5 Americans live where adult access to cannabis is legal. Another 2 in 5 Americans live in medical marijuana states. But the government still claims there's no accepted medical use for cannabis in the United States, even after 20 years of medical marijuana in California. Huh. And they say we're the ones who can't think straight. The Marijuana Agenda free podcast is available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, SoundCloud, and on our Facebook page at MJ Agenda. Free video archives are available at the Radical Russ channel on YouTube. Help keep this media free by making a donation at paypal.me/Radical Russ.
People say no to drugs.
It's really, really easy.
Adding more gasoline to the fire.
Lackadaisical.
Really tough, really big, really great.
To infect and rot our nation.
Dangerous gateway drugs.
We don't need to be legalizing marijuana.
To build and grow a stronger, healthier, and drug-free society.
What in the news? Today in What in the News, many listeners will remember that I am an Idaho native. I was born in Nampa, Idaho, at Nampa High School, class of 85, and Boise State Broncos. So I always have a little bit of an attention for my home state of Idaho, just naturally. But also in my role here as a cannabis advocate, it's impossible not to notice that Idaho is surrounded. It is surrounded by states that have legal marijuana in Washington, Oregon, and Nevada, medical marijuana in Montana, CBD only in Wyoming and Utah. The Utah one is expanding, and they could get full medical marijuana through a ballot measure this November. And of course, the nation of Canada to the north is going to legalize marijuana for adults this summer. So Idaho's completely surrounded and remains one of just four states. Just four states left that have absolutely no marijuana reform, no CBD oil, no medical, no legalization. So I always keep my eye on Idaho. And of those four states, Idaho, Kansas, South Dakota, and Nebraska, Idaho stands alone in being the only state that passed a CBD oil law that was then vetoed by the governor. The governor's name is Butch Otter. So he's kind of a masculine sea mammal, I guess. Butch Otter vetoed this bill last session, which is 2015. I think it's a biennial session. So in 2015, he vetoed the bill. Only governor in the nation to have vetoed such a bill. And it passed with overwhelming bipartisan support in both chambers of the Idaho legislature. Well, the CBD advocates are trying again in the Gem State. And the Idaho Statesman reports that the House advanced their bill. It's a CBD oil bill. As long as the product is prescribed, I guess they mean recommended, by a doctor. The vote was 59 to 11 in the Idaho House. And then that means the bill then goes on to the Senate. Okay. So the next story I got from Idaho had to do with Governor Otter being at an event in Firth, Idaho. And he was being asked about various bills and whether or not he would veto them. And he made a blanket statement about, you know, I don't, you know, I'm not going to comment on particular bills, what I might do. And keep in mind, when Otter vetoed this bill back in 2015, in his veto statement, he said that he sympathized with the families whose kids have epilepsy and can get, you know, treatment, can get some relief with medical cannabis, with CBD oil. But he says, this was Butch Otter's veto statement, 2015, that the bill ignores ongoing scientific testing on alternative treatments, and it asks the state to look past the potential for misuse and abuse with criminal intent. Misuse and abuse of CBD oil for criminal intent? Butch Otter here is saying that he's vetoing CBD oil for epileptic kids because what? Some teenagers might smoke pot somewhere? Somebody might sell a baggie of reefer. Look, I can guarantee you, Butch, that's happening in Idaho right now. Trust me. Nothing about CBD oil is going to affect one way or another people in Idaho who want to smoke pot to get high. They're two different things. There's nothing. In fact, the original CBD oil plant that gained so much attention, the Charlotte's Web plant that is talked about in Colorado, going all the way back to the Sanjay Gupta weed documentary, that plant, Charlotte's Web, its original strain name was Hippie's Disappointment. That's right, Hippie's Disappointment, because nobody could get high off of it. Well, down there in Firth, after this House bill got through 59 to 11, it's on its way to the Senate, Butch Otter hinted that he'd probably veto it again. There was an event called Capital for a Day out in Firth. And he said, quote, "I always reserve judgment on a bill until the bill reaches my desk. It's never been my design to say I'm going to veto a bill or I'm going to sign a bill," end quote. But then he went on to say, to give an example, that if a bill passed that legalized marijuana, that's something he'd veto. And then he mentioned the CBD oil. And that's when a former Idaho Falls legislature, later a tax commissioner, piped up. She was sitting to Otter's left. She pipes up and says, "Oh, it just passed the House. You know, CBD oil just passed the House." And Otter replies, "Well, I vetoed it once." Butch Otter is poised to veto for a second time a CBD oil bill with, that has huge bipartisan support in his legislature, and the people of Idaho are for it. He's worried someone's going to smoke joint. And then this leads to some shenanigans. What happened is that the bill that got out of the House then has to go to the Senate. It goes to the Senate Health and Welfare Committee. And on Monday, a Republican, Senator Tony Potts, asked the Senate Health and Welfare Committee to give this bill a hearing because the bill was being blocked, right? It's one of those deals where they're just going to let it die in some committee. And so he pulled a procedure. Potts pulls this procedure to call for a hearing on the CBD oil bill. He says, quote, "I think we have to remember that we represent people who vote for us, people who are our friends. If your commissioners or if your constituents are anything like mine, there's a large amount of individuals who desire the health benefits of CBD oil," end quote. So Potts is trying to get this thing just a hearing. Let's just debate it. Right. So as he's trying to bring this up, the chairman, who's a Republican named Lee Hyder, gavels him down. Like, we're not going to talk about this. And he says, quote, "If anyone on this committee wants to talk about this, they can do so in my office," end quote. The majority of the panel then headed toward Hyder's office to discuss Potts' motion. So the senator made a motion in open hearing, and the chairman gavels him down and says, "No, we're going to take this to my office." So as they go back to his office, to Hyder's office, a reporter from the Associated Press wanted to follow in. All right, well, let's report on this. Hyder barred the press from the office, would not let the press inside the office, but didn't really matter so much because the hearing inside Hyder's office was so contentious, inside the chairman's office, they could hear yelling on the other side of the door. According to the AP reporter, they could hear Hyder yelling, quote, "The governor's office doesn't want this bill. The prosecutors don't want this bill. The Office on Drug Policy doesn't want this bill," end quote. So the guy is taking this from public discussion into private, barring the press. And the whole reason he's trying to shut down this CBD oil bill is because the governor, the law enforcement, and the drug cops don't want it. That's how the Idaho Senate's being run here. Now, after that happened, the next story to come out of Idaho, AP reported on this. This happened on Monday, right? On Tuesday, they got back together and vacated the hold, right? They were just going to table the bill, and that's what they decided in the back room as they're yelling, right? They, in the back room yelling, they finally said, "All right, we're going to kill this bill. This bill's dead." Tuesday, they come back and say, "Oh, that vote we had about killing the bill, cancel that." Because as it turned out, we broke the law. Yeah, the Senate Health and Welfare Chairman, Lee Hyder, the Republican, asked to vacate the vote, saying, quote, "The chair acknowledges violation of Senate Rule 20 in that an unnoticed and unapproved executive session occurred." He then asked for unanimous consent to set aside the vote, and it was granted. Now, we still don't know if this Lee Hyder is going to let the bill advance to a hearing. But Raul Labrador, U.S. congressman who's running in the primary to become governor, said, quote, "If this administration has real valid reasons to oppose the CBD oil legislation, they should present them in a public open forum. They should defeat ideas in committee, not hide behind a committee chairman to avoid the public debate," end quote. And another GOP primary opponent, Tommy Ahlquist, says, quote, "Since day one, Tommy has supported the legalization of CBD oil that helps sick people as long as the THC is removed and it's prescribed by a doctor," end quote. Now, they're not running against Butch Otter. Butch Otter is term limited, thank God. But his lieutenant governor, a guy named Bob Little, I think, or something Little, I forget his last name or his first name. But Little is trying to maintain the status quo and go along with the keep pot out of Idaho at all costs stand. And he's got two GOP primary opponents that are countering him on this issue, two. And understand, in Idaho, it's the GOP primary that's the actual election. It's not like an actual Democrat is going to win any sort of statewide office, governor's office in Idaho. And not since Cecil Andrus, back when I was a little kid, has Idaho ever had a Democratic governor.
Yes, and I'd have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for these blasted kids and their dogs.
Yeah, it's some shenanigans in Idaho, because Butch Otter says that when a person is hooked on drugs, they're no longer free. Of course, Butch Otter used to smoke cigarettes like a fiend, and was such a drinker that he got himself a DUI coming back from a tight-fitting jeans contest. I guess those drugs are okay, but not CBD oil to help epileptic kids.
The Marijuana Agenda is a listener-supported independent podcast brought to you by Radical Russ Media, LLC. Subscribe to our VIP feed at MJAgenda.com for access to our ad-free podcast segment archive. Make a one-time donation to support the Marijuana Agenda at paypal.me/radicalruss. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
Now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
Your medicine cabinet is so easy to access, it might as well be out in public. Nearly 1 in 6 teens have abused prescription medications, and over 70% got them from a home. Keep your drugs off the streets. Return all leftover medication to a pharmacy and talk to your teens about prescription drug abuse. A message from the Partnership for a Drug-Free Canada.
This has been an actual anti-drug public service announcement. To combat this and other drug war hysteria, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific at live.mjagenda.com or download the free podcast at mjagenda.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
What are you people? On dope?
Learn more at mjagenda.com.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Welcome to ACE's Patient Focused Update. Since California became the first state to restore cannabis as medicine in 1996, almost every U.S. state now recognizes some form of cannabis as medicine. But since 1971, the federal government has steadfastly denied the medical benefits of herbal cannabis. Americans for Safe Access is the nation's leading organization fighting for the rights of all patients who use cannabis as medicine. Join us now for another edition of ASA's Patient Focused Update.
Welcome to another edition of the Patient Focused Update, the podcast for Americans for Safe Access. I'm Russ Belville, and joining us again, we have Dr. Jehan Marku, the Chief Science Officer for ASA. And Dr. Marku, welcome back.
Thank you, Russ.
Well, glad to have you here because there's all sorts of stuff going on with respect to medical cannabis. We'll discuss upcoming conferences that are happening. We've got the opioid crisis that ASA is looking to address. We'll discuss that as well. I'm also really excited because coming up in June, we've got Oklahoma voting on a medical cannabis ballot initiative, question 788. So we're looking good there. And is it your feeling there, Dr. Marcus, that we're looking good for Oklahoma as far as it getting passed?
Yeah, I think people have concerns about what it will look like in the end, but I think that chances are good that there will be progress made.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the vote. It's coming during the primary election. Governor Fallon moved it to the primary. And as medical cannabis initiatives go, this one's pretty expansive as far as allowing for cultivation and access to whole plants. So it'll be interesting to see how, if this passes, when it passes and gets developed, where it ends up among the medical cannabis states. Because we saw for a while there, the states got more and more restrictive as they went through legislative processes rather than initiatives. Now we're seeing more states coming back with initiatives and bringing back more protections and maybe evolving a bit. All of this leads me to our first topic of discussion, Jehan, which is this remarkable report that Americans for Safe Access puts out, the state report cards for 2018. I just saw my copy of it yesterday, and I was wondering if you could just expand on it a bit, tell our listeners what this report is all about and why it's so important.
Well, thank you. So for the last 3 years, every year, Americans for Safe Access grades states based on their program. And so this is an annual report entitled Medical Marijuana Access in the United States, a patient-focused analysis of the patchwork of state laws. And this report examines the status of states that have passed medical marijuana laws. And I think that's the key there, is that they have a cannabis program on the books. And it grades those programs on a 500-point scale. 46 states and 3 territories have some form of a medical cannabis program. You know, some are CBD only. And this basically means about 95% of the American population lives in a state with some form of a medical cannabis law. So we've seen some states improve, such as Maryland, who in previous years had gotten a low score because they had a program on the books, but it hadn't been implemented. And so, you know, just by setting up access centers, things like that can improve a score. But this is an important management tool for folks who are serious about improving their medical cannabis program, both advocates, regulators, you know, and with the ongoing opioid crisis, we have to look for solutions that can help reduce the number of preventable deaths. And, you know, some states are programs are less robust than others. I think being able to compare a state's progress with other states is incredibly helpful in creating a roadmap for improvement. And so basically the categories we look at are patients' rights and civil protections. So are there DUI protections? Are there employment protections? Are there child services protections? Things that we may take for granted when we use other prescription medications. The other one is access to medicine. Are there actually centers open? Is there supply available? The ease of navigation. How easy is it to navigate to the resources you need to become a patient and have those legal immunities to protect you and your loved ones? The functionality. Is the program actually functioning? Just having a dispensary with no product in it doesn't count as a functioning operation. And the fifth category is the consumer safety and provider requirements. So many states require mandatory testing, and we're seeing some states starting to require or allow this. And so we have to look at a couple of things there.
This is interesting to me because the report has come out over the last few years, and one of the years it came out, I was really shocked because I think it was Illinois landed at the top of your rankings, and I blew my top. It was like, there's no way Illinois is a better place to be a medical marijuana patient than, say, Oregon or California that had such, you know, robust programs that had been in place for so long. So I'm kind of interested in, have the rankings changed in a certain way, how you evaluate evaluate these, the point system, or what weight you're giving certain categories?
Well, I think I could just discuss five takeaways, and I think it would help answer some of those overarching questions, and then we can discuss some of the frequently asked questions. But just want to say that improvement is still needed. Every state could improve their program, whether it's adding more civil protections, improving product safety standards, allowing a greater variety of administrative forms of cannabis, or reducing the amount of time to implementation. Each program has its own set of needed improvement. The other one is cannabis and opioids. So when it comes to using cannabis as a tool for combating pain or the opioid crisis, you want to make sure that it's actually available for people who live with chronic pain conditions. And sometimes those are mutually exclusive things, because if you're, say, going to a pain clinic, they may or may not screen for THC as a reason to boot you out of the program. Even the research at these pain clinics has shown that cannabis use is not correlated highly with relapse, especially in heroin use at these clinics. We also have to remember that this movement is moving forward. In 2017, two states passed laws creating new programs, like West Virginia, for example. Became the 29th state to pass a comprehensive program, and Indiana joined the list of CBD states by passing a limited program. How the grades have changed is with safety protocols, and these are making a bigger difference. Now, you mentioned Oregon and Washington and California. These have good programs, but we're seeing a lot of a greater scrutiny with some of how these products are manufactured and the testing requirements. We don't want to see products that have super high amounts of pesticides you wouldn't want in any other food or consumed product, for example.
See. Mm-hmm.
So Alaska, for example, improved from a D- to a C, so maybe no summer school for them, because they adopted regulations requiring stricter labeling, pesticide testing, and standard operating procedures for people running the cannabis businesses. And this is one of the aspects where ACE has been helping with patient-focused certification, help companies verify their compliance with product safety standards that already exist, as well as with their state and local laws. Again, states that improved the most were states that generally improved in supply and access for patients. So Louisiana, Massachusetts, and Maryland saw increases. Louisiana saw a 16% increase in their grade because of their product safety regulations, as well as a bill that extended arrest protections to employees who work in the medical cannabis industry.
Yes, yes.
So things like that weigh, I think, bigger in this program too. And again, after 4 years of waiting, Maryland patients finally have access to their medicine through over 20 dispensaries, which raised Maryland's grade by over 8%. Massachusetts had a more modest improvement of over 4% after implementing regulations that allow nurse practitioners to issue recommendation and allow for medical cannabis in hospice and home care term facilities. So, Massachusetts is also working on fixing their issues with supply problems. And so, again, the five takeaways are really that improvements are still needed. We need to pay attention to cannabis and opioids and making sure these programs are set up to help combat this crisis. The movement continues to move forward in terms of passing laws and passing bills. The big difference in scores are safety protocols. These are weighted more heavily this year. And again, states that are improving the most in this rubric are states that have improvements in their supply and in their access.
Okay. So let me drill down a little bit on a few of these, because you brought up Louisiana, and that's been one, as I color in maps to tell people which states are medical or CBD, it's always been a guessing game with Louisiana, because they had a law, but then we decided the law was no good because it didn't actually function. And then there were some changes to that law, but then I was told they weren't functional either. Where are we at with the state of Louisiana? Can we say it is a medical marijuana state or a CBD-only state with confidence now?
Well, According to our score this year, it gets a D minus. There still needs to be a lot of improvements, I think. I think there still are access issues, but the program is shaping up. I think it's a good sign that we're seeing civil protections being put in place explicitly for the patient's providers, for the people who work at dispensaries. Having worked a lifetime ago in dispensaries in California, I have to say it is always a little nerve-wracking knowing, is this going to be the day when the feds raid us or the sheriff raids us and shuts us down? And what sort of protections will we have for, you know, being there, safe access for, by providing safe access to these patients?
Oh, I was going to say, well, you've got Louisiana coming into the D minus. As I look at the other CBD only states in the South and the Midwest and the Intermountain West, those are all coming in at an F. So I guess Louisiana is doing better than those CBD states.
I think so. Louisiana kind of has a unique program. They have these university partners. Their cultivation sites are actually up and running in some instances. And so I think that with the support of the universities there and their researchers and those resources, I think is going to make a big difference, because there you're going to see people who have science and medicine backgrounds, people who are trained in things like food safety and safe handling of these sorts of products, creating a very interesting culture at those universities. And so, you know, time will tell how effective this model will be, but it's moving forward and they're thinking, I think they're thinking long term here, because the universities are invested in these programs as well for funding their programs, for research, for and development of products. But it still has a long way to go to see, you know, how patient enrollment will go. How easy will that be? How many physicians are going to be able to become doctors that can make those recommendations and things like that still remain to be seen. But I could see, you know, in the next year, if actually centers start to open up and there are access points or patients registered, we could see this grade go up, you know, probably to a C next year with just opening up access centers.
Remarkable.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
Health Cannabinoid, your ACMPR experts. Consultation services for medical cannabis. Visit healthcannabinoid.com or call 1-800-906-1383. That's www.healthcannabinoid.com or call 1-800-906-1383. Health Cannabinoid.
You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
We've turned the corner on drug addiction in the United States. Drug addiction in the United States is under control.
Okay, maybe you're a little high. After 5 years of legal marijuana in Colorado and Washington, both states have shown no increase in teen use of marijuana and decreases in marijuana DUI arrests, while generating tens of thousands of jobs and hundreds of millions in tax revenue. Legalization is no longer theory. It's a proven public policy benefit. Tell your elected officials it's time to end adult marijuana prohibition.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is brought to you by Cannabis Kamikaze, a professional licensed producer from Canada producing 3 pounds per light. Follow Cannabis Kamikaze on Twitter at Cannabis Kamikaze. That's at Cannabis, K-A-M-I-K-A-Z. Cannabis Kamikaze.
This is Marijuana Policy Insider, brought to you by the Marijuana Policy Project at MPP.org. MPP is the nation's largest marijuana policy organization, promoting sensible marijuana policy reform in Congress, in state legislatures, and through state and local ballot initiatives. Today, we take a look at the most recent state and federal reform efforts with the Marijuana Policy Insider.
Welcome once again to the Marijuana Policy Insider, the podcast for Marijuana Policy Project. I'm Russ Belville, and joining us here today, we have the Communications Director for MPP, Morgan Fox, joining us from Washington, D.C. Morgan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. Thanks for having me.
Well, there's so much happening on the federal level, and one of the things I've been educating my audience about recently has to do with the process of getting some reforms happening at the federal level. And folks know a little bit about the Rohrabacher Amendment, the amendment that's in the spending bill that prevents any money being spent to go after the medical marijuana states. And in learning about that amendment, people have kind of noticed how there can be these roadblocks, these impediments that can even come down to just one man, in this case, the head of the Rules Committee, Representative Pete Sessions from Texas, who can block a lot of these reforms. So we talked about this a little bit in our last segment, but I was wondering if you could give us an update on what's happening with things like the Rohrabacher Amendment and getting some federal change happening in this country.
Well, right now, it seems like a lot of debates are going on behind closed doors. There's a lot of support on the Appropriations Committee for continuing the Rohrabacher protections, which stop the federal government from being able to spend any resources going after state legal medical marijuana programs, including patients and providers. Unfortunately, in the House, this keeps getting held up by Pete Sessions, as you mentioned. So in order to get it put into the new fiscal year 2018 budget, there's going to have to be a lot more backroom lobbying, as well as hopefully your viewers and other supporters reaching out to their members of Congress, particularly if they happen to be on the Appropriations Committees, and making sure that they know that their constituents support these protections. But since Jeff Sessions has made it pretty clear that he wants to come after marijuana in some fashion, we've seen increasing support on the Appropriations Committee for additional things like allowing the VA to be able to recommend medical marijuana to their patients, protecting marijuana businesses through 280E tax reform or through banking regulations, as well as even protecting all state marijuana laws through what's called the McClintock Amendment. So we're seeing a lot more support growing for these. That being said, because of a couple of holdouts, it may be very difficult to get anything other than the Rohrabacher protections into the budget this year.
This Pete Sessions, this Republican from Amarillo, Texas, is, like I said, he's the guy who's kind of blocking this on the House side. And we recently were entertained, I guess is a word we could use, by one of his performances where he went off at length about marijuana being the gateway drug and how he knew people that were dying from heroin who had tried marijuana the year before. I mean, with a guy this reefer mad, it sounds as if the only choice we've got is to replace him, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the guy's an absolute dinosaur on this sort of thing. And, you know, regardless of how he feels about marijuana, he should at least have the respect for his colleagues to allow them to vote on this issue. And he has been basically blocking anything marijuana related from a vote in the House all year and going back into last year. So, you know, we're going to be making a concentrated effort to try to get this guy out of office and, or at the very least, get him off the Rules Committee, because there's not going to be a whole lot of potential for any sort of substantive, comprehensive federal law changes as long as this guy is in this powerful position.
My congressman out here in Portland, Oregon, is Representative Earl Blumenauer, and he has highlighted Sessions as being an opponent to reform and even talked about getting billboards out there to oppose him in his district. This was followed up by the prohibitionist group Project Sam and Kevin Sabet announcing they would fund billboards thanking Pete Sessions for interfering with the progress of marijuana reform. I guess what this comes down to, Morgan, is what do his constituents think? What do the people of Amarillo think? Is the pot lobby going up against him going to be something that actually burnishes his credentials with his base? Or is there a possibility that we can really get some grassroots upstart to take on this guy? I mean, I know we got Beto O'Rourke in that one Texas district. What are your hopes for unseating this guy?
Well, it's tough to determine exactly how his constituents feel about the issue, but one can be pretty sure in assuming that they support medical marijuana, considering nationally support for medical is at around 90%. So I don't think that he's really doing himself any favors by preventing these bills from coming to a vote. But really, we're just going to try to get as much outreach as we can from his constituents who do support marijuana policy reform to at least let him know that he's on the wrong side of the issue. And, you know, it's going to be a while before we can figure out exactly if there's a candidate that has a chance of unseating him and whether or not that candidate can be supported from the national perspective. But, you know, I think that we just need to keep making him know or letting him know that these positions are embarrassing and they're anti-democratic.
Exactly. And Sessions is increasingly becoming an outlier when it comes to people in the House and the Senate who are increasingly warming to the idea of marijuana reform. Can you update us a little bit? I know we saw Senator Gillibrand in the Senate coming to co-sponsor the Marijuana Legalization Act. How are we doing as far as bills and co-sponsors and generating support on Capitol Hill?
Well, this year we've seen unprecedented growth, both in the number of co-sponsors and the types of bills that are being introduced from both sides of the aisle. Unfortunately, we're just not quite at the level where we can get those things to pass. And it's kind of a political hot potato at this point. You know, there's a lot of support for reforming marijuana laws, but, you know, as they say, it's a mile wide and an inch deep. A lot of politicians aren't going to bat for this issue. They're not making it one of the central parts of their campaigns. But we're starting to see that change.
Well, that's good news. Now let's take a look at the other end of Washington and the White House, where President Donald Trump has shocked us in the marijuana reform community with a few comments recently where he's praised the murderous drug war dictator, President Duterte out there in the Philippines. He's mentioned that he joked about President Xi out there in China becoming president for life. That ought to be something he wants to try, he joked. And of course, he's made these comments that imply that he'd like to see a death penalty for drug dealers and a much harsher crackdown here in America, but that he's been told America's just not ready for it. Does this send shivers down your spine? Are you worried about this actually having some effect on U.S. policy, these mad ideas of President Trump's?
You know, I'd be more worried about it if I thought America was ever going to be ready for it, but, you know, even at the height of the drug war, there was a lot of opposition pretty much across the board to applying the death penalty to drug dealers. I mean, that's just so far away from what we are as a country that I'm not particularly concerned about it. But if Trump is real serious about wanting to hurt drug dealers, he needs to start getting in front of legalization because, you know, he may want to kill them, but taking money out of their pockets is the next best step. And if he's as pro-business as he claims to be, it's a two-for-one deal.
And especially also with the attention that's being paid now to what we have with the opioid overdose crisis in this country, the good folks out at Americans for Safe Access are promoting, you know, medical cannabis as a way to help deal with this opiate crisis. I, on the other hand, see President Trump and Jeff Sessions to some extent trying to conflate the two, trying to link them together as if to say, you know, marijuana leads to heroin and heroin leads to death. Therefore, we ought to stop marijuana. Do you see that developing in their rhetoric and in their policies, this idea that marijuana is the gateway and so we've got to stop it to address the opiate crisis?
It's definitely coming from Jeff Sessions, and as well as, you know, people like the new Secretary for Health and Human Services, and a lot of the people that are involved in drug policy at the national level within the administration. I don't think that we're seeing too much of that coming from Trump himself, mostly because he doesn't really care about the issue. People close to him have said that it really isn't even on his radar at all. And during the campaign, he said that he thinks it should be a state's issue. But the old school drug warriors that are still in his administration are definitely trying to bring up or trying to reawaken the gateway myth. And that's why public education is so important. You know, people get very, very scared when they start hearing about the opioid epidemic. And people, when they're scared, start looking for, you know, any solution possible. And the one that's the easiest oftentimes, particularly for older Americans, is that gateway theory. You know, if we can nip this problem in the bud, then it won't be an issue. And the science just isn't there for that. And we're seeing more and more information saying that marijuana can actually help wean people off of opiates and can, you know, increase pain treatment abilities without resorting to opiates. So we just need to keep getting the science out there, and hopefully we'll find some states that are really want to pursue this as a method of trying to alleviate the opioid problem. And then we'll start getting more research and we'll start having evidence to be able to show these people.
Well, that's been the story of the war on drugs and reforming these prohibitionist policies since the beginning. It seems to be up to the states to lead. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the states. We just recently had Vermont become the first state to pass adult marijuana legalization through its legislature. And I know there's a whole bunch of states in the Northeast that are working on these kind of things, Connecticut, Rhode Island, New Hampshire, and so forth. Can you give us a rundown of what's happening there in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic when it comes to marijuana reform?
Well, nationally, we've seen bills introduced in 20 states to regulate marijuana similarly to alcohol. And I think that we're probably going to see a couple more. States like Connecticut, Delaware, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire are all going to be considering these bills and moving farther and farther down the line. And particularly as they start seeing the benefits from Massachusetts and Maine and from possession legalization in Vermont, it's going to be really difficult to continue supporting these outdated policies. So we're going to be continuing to work in those states throughout the year, and hopefully we'll be able to at least move legislation further down the road, if not actually get something passed this year, particularly in states like Delaware and Connecticut. We're also working heavily in Rhode Island, which has been considering legalization for a number of years and has a legislatively created task force that's meant to look at the issue, but it keeps getting delayed, and they're really worried more about if they should make marijuana legal as opposed to how. When in reality is, next door neighbor in Massachusetts is going to have stores open pretty soon. So any cannabis consumer in Rhode Island is basically going to be able to make at most a 35-minute drive to the neighboring state. And that means that the Rhode Island is going to be missing out on tax revenue, and it's going to continue wasting money punishing adults for using something safer than alcohol.
Yeah, we see some of these states that are a bit reticent to get on the green wave here, putting forth these bills for study commissions. We need to have more study on this. I don't think there's anything left to study, Morgan. I think we pretty much figured this out. But I did want to get your opinion before we let you go here. We're in a great spot here in America where now 46 of our states in the United States have some form of reform. At the very minimum, they've got a CBD oil law, like in Texas or in Alabama, right? So that leaves us four states, Idaho, South Dakota, Kansas, and Nebraska, with absolutely zero marijuana reforms, if you don't count Nebraska's decrim. Of those four states, Morgan, just your own guess, who do you think is going to be the last one to pass any marijuana reforms?
Well, I mean, you're probably not going to want to hear this, but I think that Idaho might be the last one. there is just so much opposition there. I mean, when you have the sitting governor saying that he's going to veto any sort of marijuana policy reforms, I mean, these people are making it their life's mission. And you'd think they'd have more important things to worry about than trying to block sensible reforms, particularly when they're surrounded by other states that are reaping the benefits of legalization.
Exactly. I was going to say, we've got Idaho surrounded at this point, especially with Canada going legal here this summer. So we'll see. When I'm pressed on the question, I always bring it down to Idaho and Kansas, and I give the edge to Kansas because Idaho has petition power and Kansas doesn't. But you may be right. It may be the gem state. Morgan Fox is the communications director for Marijuana Policy Project and joins us every month to give us the latest on what's happening on Capitol Hill and throughout the state legislatures. Find out more at mpp.org. Morgan, thanks for your insight, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
total war against public enemy public number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think we'd be a mistake to legalize.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
Radical rant.
Last week on the show, we discussed some of the shocking comments from President Donald Trump, where he discussed other countries that have much harsher penalties, the death penalty, the ultimate penalty for drugs. And he admired how those countries don't have the same sort of drug problem that we have. This echoes comments that he's made before, where he had praised Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines, saying he's doing a great job with the drug problem. And we noted how a guy being appointed to the U.S. Sentencing Commission is a dinosaur who believes that you got to get harsh on drugs. So when it comes to this call for executing drug dealers, one thing that I think didn't get a lot of play in the mainstream media that covered it is that Trump already has the power to execute drug dealers. Not all of them. Hold on. Don't worry. Don't freak out yet. Not everybody. Just the super kingpins. This is a U.S. law. 18 United States Code, Section 3591, Section B1, or Paragraph B1, and it reads, "The sentence of death can be carried out on a defendant who has been found guilty of manufacturing, importing, or distributing a controlled substance if the act was committed as part of a continuing criminal enterprise, but only if the defendant is... 1. The principal administrator, organizer, or leader of the enterprise, or is one of several such principal administrators, organizers, or leaders, kingpins. And 2. The quantity of the controlled substance is 60,000 kilograms or more of a mixture of or substance containing a detectable amount of marijuana, or 60,000 or more marijuana plants, or... if the enterprise received more than $20 million in gross receipts during any 12-month period of its existence." That law, 18 U.S.C. 3591, B1, describes many of the state legal cannabis cultivation firms. I can think of a lot of them that are clearing $20 million a year or that have produced more than 60,000 cannabis plants. But before we get too shook up about this, the law... is probably not constitutional. Probably can't actually issue a death penalty to a drug kingpin. There was a 2008 Supreme Court case, Kennedy v. Louisiana, and it had to do with Louisiana imposing a death penalty on a guy who'd raped a child, which, you know, worst crime you can imagine. And fun fact, Senator Ted Cruz filed a brief supporting Louisiana having the right to execute a child rapist, but it was found unconstitutional. It was considered cruel and unusual punishment under the Eighth Amendment. And Justice Kennedy wrote, "The court concludes that there is a distinction between intentional first-degree murder, on the one hand, and non-homicide crimes against individuals, even including child rape, on the other. The latter crimes may be devastating in their harm, as here, but in terms of moral depravity and of the injury to the person and to the public, they cannot compare to murder in their severity and irrevocability." They say child rape's awful, but at least you're still alive. You can still have a life. Murder's the worst possible thing. And so Justice Kennedy at the court basically said that only murder, only capital crimes, can be subject to the death penalty because you can't kill someone who didn't kill someone.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja.
Okay. I don't know why the programming does this to me sometimes, folks, but... So the bar for capital punishment... is that you have to have killed somebody. There has to be an intentional first-degree sort of murder. And so this section, if they tried to give someone the death penalty for drug trafficking, probably found unconstitutional.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
I say probably because we've got the Roberts Court with Neil Gorsuch on it. Who knows what they'll decide? We're going to talk about the Supreme Court and more about this death penalty for drug traffickers in Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio, now.